set the record straight for a minute. Hate, I get it. Say it.
Freak sucks.
I want to know if he's bunking up with Tyrell, and if he's the big spoon or the little spoon. I think he'd be a little spoon just out of principle, because yeah, Tyrell's kind of, you know, he's got the elderly gravitas.
Yeah, and that's true. And using those key stats, they are the key things that we use to pick out armor. I don't appreciate the laughing, because I recognize how fumbled that was as I lost my train of thought. But anyways, back to the
no.
Wait, what was that?
I like that you came back to start it off fresh. We're gonna do it live, damn it. 3, 2, 1.
Real legend never die. Still with the business, you should cry, let it lie. Sign for a 9, let's go real suicide.
Welcome into Divots and Pivots, everybody. I am Andrew LeDuc. This is Bud Copeland as we pop the top off for another Tuesday night here on That Sports Podcast Network. And I just had one of those moments where listening to our intro again there, I just when it lines up perfectly at the end there, where the beat changes right at the end of you talking, it does something for me. But how are you doing? What's doing it for you tonight?
Whatever it is, it's not doing it for me the way that whatever you're talking about is doing it for you. Do you need another minute? You want to finish up before I jump in here?
No, jump on in. That's how I like it.
Well, as you can hear upstairs, World War III has commenced. The intern's getting a little feisty, demanding her rights, you know, food, shelter, bathing, that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, we're still in the, how to put this, listening ears mode. Sometimes they're on, sometimes they're off. We're working through it, but I think we got the right team around us. You know, we're just going to focus on one day at a time, taking everything as it comes to us, and we'll make it out alive.
Nice.
I'm in a great spot. I got this. We'll talk about Boudreaux's travels here.
Yeah.
In a bit, but I mean, needless to say, morale is super high after experiencing what I got to experience last week. It was really dope. Shout out again to my brother-in-law, Patrick, my sister, Betsy, the roommate, for obviously being like, sure, disappear for 3 days to go to the PGA championship. No problem. Love you, honey.
You got a real one there.
And then the folks at Big Spring Country Club. And then of course also Valhalla for their hospitality, because that's where I ended that experience. And we'll go, you know, shot by shot, moment by moment, so you can live vicariously through me, you and the dozens of others taking this in across the we have listeners in multiple time zones. I think that's
you sure do.
That's an important thing to point out. So no, things are good. The Charles Schwab, we have an interesting tournament this week that we will spend some time talking about. There was a little bit of other sports news. And I would say my opening thought right now for today is essentially golf's in a good space. And after being at the PGA, obviously it's a little recency bias, and you know, I was close to it, and we'll talk about all the different storylines that came out of it. But I'm a firm believer that people who want to talk about the divide in golf, or you know, all this controversy, et cetera, you're also looking for it to a certain degree. You know, I think about the run that Scottie Scheffler has been on this year, and how there's nobody's talked about really an asterisk of like, well, you know, he really went on that run because, you know, those guys aren't there, like the live guys, you know, watered down fields and all. I don't think so, because the way that he's been performing and the stuff that he's been doing is at such a high level. So the only time it really comes up again is at the majors. And we had Bryson with a near back-to-back live PGA. That would have been just funny as hell if all of a sudden live golf, I start marketing the shit out of, like, you know, owned by live golf. I'd be like all the PGA merch that you can. But it, if you're looking for the negative, there's negative. You can always find people who disagree. You can always find, you know, fault, especially with partners like, you know, the PIF, and you want to go down that road. But you can also look on the bright side. It was a phenomenal week. Xander breaks through after being so close for so long. I mean, the guy, if you look at his Wikipedia page, all of those yellow boxes, he's got so many top tens in majors. And then it finally came through. Look out for him at Pinehurst in a couple weeks, because he's a top 10 machine at the US Open too. So golf's in a good place. This thing with the PIF and the PGA and the investments and the PGA Tour Enterprises, at the end of the day, you either tune in or you don't. And that's not the variable. Is it football season? Are you a golf junkie like us? Or is it just a big sporting event like the PGA Championship? And then when you sprinkle in a little bit of controversy, like we got Friday morning, it makes it even spicier. So that's a lot of Boudreaux up front, because as you can tell, my cup runneth over since getting back from Louisville. I'm just overflowing with emotion and experience.
I love it.
How you doing at the home base up there in New Hampshire? Live free or die.
Good. We had ourselves our first little summer thunderstorm.
Just a haircut. A couple hours ago.
I did get a haircut today. How's it look? How's it look? It feels
phenomenal. Good. It feels nice. If I had hair, I'd get a haircut too.
But we had our first little thunderstorm. So I took advantage to take one more stab at poking fun at Scotty on the TikTok, on the Instagram, on the YouTube. So check that out. Just a little silly, stupid stuff.
Let me get my PGA Valhalla gear in the shot.
Oh yeah, that's nice. I like that. The vineyard. You're a massive fan of the pocket shirt too. You're a massive fan of the
frat boy from the South. My uniform for many years of my life was short shorts and a pocket tee. Wasn't a pretty sight too. I was a big boy, but back to you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Cause that sounds like you were living the classy life, and that's where I kind of wanted to start this morning I do want to bring it around to the Scotty Scheffler situation. Cause obviously we've gotten a ton of light has been shed on it. I feel like for the most part, people have calmed down, but as you said, people who want to look for the negative are going to look for the negative. And that's where I caution people to pause. And as I say, stay classy, friends. Because here's the fact of the matter is, nobody get on the cop who made the arrest. The cop was doing his job. The cop was in a hectic, intense, early morning in the dark situation that was unexpected. You can't get on the cop for doing his job and reacting very reasonably to a situation that Scotty Scheffler is to blame for. His part in that, he did something wrong. Now,
Was he told to do something wrong? Was he told by another cop, hey, yes, go ahead and pull over to the median and cruise on up. You're in a courtesy vehicle. And then did Captain America see that there's a car on the loose and let me run over there and hey, slow down. And
that could also be easily explained by just those two cops not communicating and one being closer to the actual scene. And I'm telling you, I feel like emotions come into play there as the cops. Cause that was,
an intense scene. You know who fucked up? Whoever was in charge on the ground, who was too damn scared for whatever reason to put two and two together to seriously say like, okay, and if Scotty doesn't want to answer questions, then he doesn't have to. But I got a feeling he was cooperating. Right. Never once did he say, "You know who I am? Or I'm Scotty Scheffler." He had his player credentials. He was in a very clearly marked courtesy car for players.
There was that video of him asking the reporter for help and basically saying, "Like, tell them who I am."
We don't know. Well, no, just asking for help. Don't put more words in there. He didn't say, tell him who I am. Yeah, true. Hey, Jeff, can you help? Okay, I mean, which could have meant anything. Like, can you reach out?
Yeah, sure. That is all he said there.
I'm overwhelmingly disappointed in the on-site officer, whoever's in charge, who did not say pause. All right, Gerald, you did the right thing. You saw a car that was out of line and you went over and stopped it. You didn't know that Mikey had given him instructions. Obviously, this person has credentials. They're in a player car. They're a player. Yeah. Sir, thank you for understanding and your patience while we sorted this out. Go on in. Somebody was either scared or it's like these Yahoos. I'm in love with this. These are the people that really got me worked up when I said, you got to be looking for the bad. Nobody's above the law. Whoopsie. Sure. The overreaction and the wild, wildly irresponsible way that people took headlines, including KFC over at Barstool, that dipshit. Mm-hmm. That guy decided that, or whoever wrote his headline decided to be like, Scotty Scheffler was arrested for assaulting a cop yesterday. Pause.
Yeah, that's so irresponsible as a reporter.
And for anybody out there, he was charged with it.
I would say technically that's the charge, but you got to read between the lines. You got to read between the lines and realize that's not one. That charge isn't going to stick.
His lawyer saying we're going to litigate or they're going to drop. Like, it's either that's one or the other, because he didn't do anything wrong. And the arraignment was supposed to be this morning. It got pushed back to June 3rd, which is probably just to say, hey, let's figure out how to delicately and, everybody save face and we're just going to drop these. But the thing that still got me fired up and to this day gets me fired up is the idea of, well, nobody's above the law. Shut your fucking mouth. What happened?
I don't think Scotty was trying to be above the law.
That's my point. It was a misunderstanding, but nobody cares. Well, Andrew, I hate to break it to you. And this is what I want to say to everybody out there. The minute you want to start running your mouth, the minute you want to start jumping to conclusions, I don't care if you're not the number one golfer in the world. At some moment in your life, you're going to want a little bit of understanding, a little bit of patience, a little bit of empathy, a little bit of grace. And for all the keyboard warriors and the Twittersphere heroes out there who decided to get a couple extra clicks by saying world number one arrested for assaulting a cop. And then like some jackass tried to comment on, you know, see, there you go. Another pro athlete thinking he's above the, it just drives me effing nuts. And the real shit bags out there on this are the people who dragged the Breonna Taylor story up because it was Louisville PD. Totally unrelated.
That's the unclassy part that I'm referring to. Like, not just that, but that's one of the things. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And in the end, that is the reason Scottie Scheffler did not win, because if you've ever, when people go through traumatic events, and actually I use that term lightly because trauma is even a term that's getting overwhelmingly used to the point where it numbs it. You know, when people say, oh,
I would just say jarring. This was a jarring event. I think
any kind of exciting near miss, you know, you're in a mm-hmm. a close call in a car or, you know, something like that where phone rings and they say, hey, we have bad news. The test is back and it's positive. And you're like, who is this again? And they're like, oh, sorry, wrong number. Anytime you get that, your heart rate's pumping. Because people are talking about how he was compartmentalized. You know, he does the stretching in jail. He gets there, you know, he only has 45 minutes. My brother-in-law was on the range when Scotty showed up. He sent me that picture. I texted you. Said the place went nuts. You know, he went out there, Scotty, we're all with you. And then it was just deadpan silence because Marty Smith was in the back talking from ESPN, trying to get an interview. And I guess Scotty's people were having none of it, obviously.
Yeah.
So he goes out and he shoots 66. And everybody's like, wow. And then the next morning he wakes up. And it was a combination of, because he even said it after the round, he goes, I didn't feel like myself. 73, 42 consecutive rounds under par or better. Yeah. And then all of a sudden he gets arrested by a mismanaged situation that should have never left the scene. You know, and if you want to come at me and try to tell it I'm favorable, no, it should have never left the scene. You put yourself in Scottie Scheffler's shoes, give him a little bit of empathy, a little bit of benefit of the doubt, and then we'll see if you draw the same conclusion. So he goes through that, and then Ted Scott's gone. So Teddy gets him through that day, and then he has to go to his kid's graduation. He had the PGA Tour chaplain on the bag, which is the right move, I guess, but at the same time, you're not anticipating. It's kind of like, had that not happened, fine. Scotty can manage the golf. The chaplain can manage his brain, you know, or whatever he's there for, guidance, or if it's just silence. But the minute that this happened, Ted Scott needed to be there to crack him in the ass. The chaplain's not going to do the same thing where Ted looked at him and goes, man, this is crazy right now. We got to lock it in. We got some work to do. And Scotty goes, all right, let's get to work. That was the conversation on the range. And then they got to work. That to me is going to be one of those things, especially if Scotty wins the US Open. I got Scotty this week winning this week in my, you know, I've
I
been,
can see it.
We're back in Dallas. The one blip on his, the one mar on his record is the round that he had just gotten arrested the day before. And his caddy's not on the bag. Ted's back on the bag. Scotty's out of the clink. I got a feeling he's going to show up to Colonial, which has been renovated. And, you know, growing up a Texas kid, Ben Hogan, the whole bit, this is a big deal to him. And all those Texas guys. So the more I thought about it, the more it started to bug me how, I'm not gonna say unfair because people get bad breaks and shit, but the lack of overall awareness and empathy when people decide to come off, or, you know, it just bothered me a little bit. Now, the internet giveth and the internet taketh away. We talked about the taketh away. It took my joy. The meme game out of this.
Well, yeah, the meme game has been fantastic. Hell, we had a little success off of it. It's just been fun.
You can separate
just poking a little fun, making light of the situation, and still in a respectful way. Because some people then get offended that you are making light of the situation and acting like he's
to laugh at.
I've had people tell me that, oh yeah, like he's a world number one golfer, tries to run down cops. I'm like, chill. Tries to run down cops. Like, he's not playing Grand Theft Auto out there. Like, let's relax a little bit here with our wordage.
But you know what? I could get behind if somebody wanted to superimpose a Scottie Scheffler character into a Grand Theft Auto scenario.
Sure. That would be fun. That's a funny way to go about it. But when you say it with such a serious tone, like you actually believe that, it's like, okay, like,
oh yeah, world number one, he tries to drag a cop through the street. It's like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah. Let's just relax. And like you said, I think there are other people that could have prevented this from happening, such as any of the PGA or Valhalla officials they couldn't have once it happened, like nothing, they couldn't have done anything at that point. But once they knew that there was the accident incident with the shuttle bus out front, like, I feel like somebody should have been out there talking to the police, but hey, we're gonna be having players trying to come in here like now. Like, is there any way we can get around? Like, someone had to have been out there doing
they were said no, it was a crime scene. That was the point, is it was a crime scene. And so whether Scotty took it upon himself to be like, oh my God, there's the gate, I'm three cars back. He was three cars from the entrance. He pulls over off of the meeting. So there was a lane for like the players and press and VIPs, a lane for, I guess, like shuttle buses and stuff, and then a lane for the public or something like that. And he just pulled out. That's my thing, is why are you jumping on a car, moving car, a cop? He's not putting anybody in danger. He couldn't have been like doing a lot of speed. You know, I get the integrity of the crime scene, but at the same time, use a little bit of moment. You're going to go stop a car with your hands. Like, what are we doing here, folks? That to me was just a bad call.
I view it as more of him trying to like bang on the car and like try to get his attention.
It's a 2,000 pound motorized vehicle, and it's not a life or death scenario. This is poor judgment.
I still don't put a ton of blame on the arresting officer here.
I do.
I still just think he was doing his job, reacting to a situation that caught him off guard.
Right. And I think his reaction was, I'm not a cop. They have hard jobs, and the people in blue out there can come jar at me if I want to disagree, but then again, we can be adults, and so I don't do the job. I don't know if I can handle that, and I think that guy handled it poorly. Why are you reaching on to a moving vehicle? That's just, to me. And now, by the way, I could be eating crow. I mean, Scotty could come out and be like, "Listen, I'm really sorry. You know, that guy was talking, and then he did say, and I rolled it up, and I was." But from he gets the benefit of the doubt until they produce there. I also want to go back to, as of right now, Scotty Scheffler has felony charges pending against him. Just say that out loud. Yes. Andrew, felony charges pending.
And that's the unfortunate truth. That's why, that's an accurate statement.
And if you're really in that camp, he did it. He deserves to be held to the highest account. Then I appreciate your fervor. I am completely and totally on the opposite side of you. I don't think that the law, and this is why we have humans who administer the law, and it's not just a series of, you know, check boxes. Did this event occur? Well, if the event occurred, then a law must have been broken. No. That said, I'm with you in the fact that these guys are trained that once it starts, you don't stop. You just let the process run, because right now the DA and a judge could be having a conversation in Louisville somewhere, and they're going, "What the fuck? No, we're not doing this. Somebody figured out we're going to drop the charges. Go on." Because they do have to go through some processes. It's not automatic from the cop. Yeah. They charge.
And that's most likely going to be what happens. At most, he'll pay a fine.
So I'll give the arresting officer a little bit of, or whoever jumped in the car, a little bit of credit. You know, kind of reactionary, or not credit, relief, a little bit of reactionary.
Yeah.
But I still blame somebody up the chain when eventually it was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Do we have to, like, is this one of those things like, oh my God, well, sir, you know, he smells like booze and there's an open bottle on the passenger side, but
that would be a totally different freaking story anyway.
Exactly. I don't know. It definitely altered the course of events. I think that I do think that he would have been in the mix, and who knows, maybe he wins, maybe probably. He doesn't. But it was certainly kind of derailed the entire thing. It's kind of wild being there. I will say that was kind of cool. And, my brother-in-law was volunteering at the tournament. He was actually there at the gate when this all went down. And, I think they came up like maybe 10 minutes after Scotty got yanked out of his car, I guess. And a cop just pointed to them, said like, "Hey, you got to turn around." They're like, "We're volunteers." And they showed their credentials, and the person's like, "I don't care. Like, you got to turn around." They're like, we're right there. Pointed them into the front gate, and then they got to like basically park in player parking right there at the Valhalla grounds instead of schlepping in from elsewhere. What else from the PGA besides Scotty? Xander, anything?
Well, Xander's really the other big star. And I will say also, though, on the note of classy, Bryson continues to make me change my mind on him, because there was a period of in the last few months, before the last few months, where I was very much kind of annoyed by him and against him, but hell, he keeps proving me wrong. He keeps proving to me that the class act that he is out there, and like, yeah, he comes about it in a bit more of a boisterous way, and he's a bit more big personality, given what he's trying to do with social media and content creation. But the way he handled being in the running and then losing out to the running, and then there was even a point where he tossed a ball at the end to a kid fan, and someone reached in front of the kid, grabbed it, and ran off, and he went and basically yelled at the guy until he came back and gave the ball back. Like, Bryson's proving me wrong, and Bryson, I got to come around on Bryson and say he's a class act, on not on the PGA Tour, obviously on the LIV Tour, but he's a class act in the world of golf in my eyes. And I think someone who's going to continue to kind of push the game forward, should I say, but on LIV.
Yeah, I agree. I just get upset with him when he's a bonehead. I've always been kind of it's the lack of awareness thing. Like when he gripes about the official world golf rankings, that's when I want to knock it off. Like,
but I think that's his like over analytical side of his brain. Like, he can't get pat. Like, he's so obsessed with numbers that to him, because those numbers don't make sense with what he knows to be reality, I feel like he can't let that go.
Yeah, for sure. I just, it just bothers me. I'm like, dude, that's when you sound like a jackass. Just like whoever's listening to this right now is going, oh, you sound like an idiot sometimes, most of the time. I like that he's leaning in. I mean, he basically wants to be a social media star who plays golf on the side. And I think the realization's coming in that he has a life that's pretty unique. And because of his achievements and what's in front of him, I mean, he won the US Open, what was it, 2020? So he gets a 10-year exemption of the US Open out of that, but he only gets a 5-year exemption to all the other majors. And so now these runner-up finishes are going to continue to kind of get him in every year. Cause if you're top 10, top 20, these, you get invited back. Like the Masters, I think it's like top 16 in ties or something stupid. Not a nice round number.
So as long as he keeps performing, then he's good.
But that's just it, is we're entering the era of LIV. And once this PGA Tour PIF, whatever deal either happens or doesn't, what's going to happen to those guys? Cause I look at DJ. Okay. If Phil's going to be in the Masters and the PGA for the rest of your life, you get lifetime invitations for those two. The rest of them, it's 5 years to the other majors. And I think 10 years at that major for, like, I think for the British Open, it's 10. And I know for the US Open, it's 10. And those times are going to run out here pretty soon. I think DJ's done. I think Phil's done. Yeah. I think Jon Rahm is reeling. I'm not going to lie. I took the most joy out of watching him struggle after those. That's instant karma. When they say instant karma is going to get you, that was it right there. Oh, I would love to play on the PGA Tour. And then all of a sudden, O2 barbecue, see you next year. Jon Rahm is absolutely 100% regretting this decision. I mean,
this has not worked out for him at all.
The half a billion dollars is going to soothe the pain. And again, because he's won the majors that he's won, he's got 10 years at the US Open and a lifetime at Augusta right in front of him. And he still has a handful of years left at the other two out of those. So he's going to be another familiar face, but those are blips. The golf landscape is so massive. We're going to see that this week with the Charles Schwab, where again, we get guys who it's like, oh yeah, I forgot about him. Or who the hell is that? New, fresh faces mixed in with a couple of big heavy hitters. That guys like Jon Rahm, I've been saying it, you know, and I subscribe to the Brandel Chamblee. They're blips. They're moments. Even LIV is a moment. You know, it's kind of like it's kind of a PGA Tour events that have come and gone. You know? We saw one recently just kind of have a couple year existence where they played down at Concession Club and then they played like in South Carolina. And then we're just not going to do that tournament again next year. It was the CJ Cup, like the CJ.
Oh, yeah.
Cup. Now CJ Cup is the sponsor for something else. So I'm kind of reveling in it. I think I love it because the dust is settling and LIV's just not bringing, again, entertaining. Fun, no different than maybe going watching some nice college golf or high level golf, you know, with a different atmosphere, but it's just not delivering what I think it thought it was going to and adding to the ecosystem of golf. Instead, it's just kind of this side opportunity for right now.
Yeah. And that's exactly what it is.
And so, but I totally agree. And Bryson and Brooks, and Jon Rahm, and maybe Cam Smith, they'll keep them in the top 10 for the next few years. But after that, I don't see LIV. I mean, Victor Hovland was another one. You remember when everybody was talking about,
they keep talking about it too.
Well, do you know why he just popped back up this week all of a sudden?
As far as the LIV talks go?
No, as far as all of a sudden, he almost won this damn thing.
Oh yeah. No. I did read the article and now I'm blanking on it, but I did read an article that talks about like his rise back.
It was a swing coach. Okay. Yeah. He's back with his old coach and all of a sudden. So we are such, we just, oh, we have to have it. Oh, he's playing poorly. Oh, he's playing poorly. Oh, we haven't heard from him. He's playing poorly. Victor said he thought about not playing in the PGA because of how he was playing. And then he went and saw
the article. That's the article I read. Yeah.
Right. And everything clicked again. I don't think Liv came anything to do with it. And I really think it's almost this sad state of affairs. People, it's almost like desperate, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. That's the, like, a, oh, is he playing so bad? He's going to go to Liv. Cause I don't see Liv luring away the top talent anymore. I think the purse strings are going to get tightened up. And also with the PGA Tour Enterprises flexing a little of that equity money.
But you're right.
Go ahead.
Anytime somebody starts, kind of a big name gets quiet, either in what they're saying or how they're playing, everyone seems to assume Liv right now. We're just, like you said, we're in this kind of pocket. That's just the assumption, because it's like the only way that's keeping Liv in the news almost.
But and it's not going to be around much longer. I do think that when the dust settles on the merger non-merger agreement investment, it's an investment. We can call it an investment. It's an
investment, yeah.
I think Liv's going to end up down under. I really do. I think it's going to be an Australian type tour, maybe Southeast Asia.
Hey, great. Like that's great over there then, because they obviously love it. So why not go in and strive there? We did have, unfortunately, when it came to the PGA this past week, we had quite a few big names really not perform that were supposed to. That, like, we had some big names miss the cut here between Ludwig, Matt Fitzpatrick, John Rahm, Wyndham Clark was the one I was thinking of right there. Akshay Bhatia, we had some guys like that. We had some guys who have won this year missed the cut. Sam Burns is just on continuing his disappearance right now. I don't know what's going on with Sam Burns. I hope he can figure that out. But yeah, we had some really, unfortunately, as good as the finish was, the top of the leaderboard was strong. The kind of the rest of the leaderboard that made the cut was a little lackluster compared to what we could have had for the guys who had missed, unfortunately. But because it's the top of the leaderboard, that's all people are watching. That had enough weight to carry it to still be an extremely entertaining major in my eyes. Yeah. So do you think the fact that we had guys like John Rahm and Ludwig, these big names right now miss, like, did it hurt the tournament at all? You think it was perfectly fine the way it was?
No, I think it was fine the way it was. I'm also a little bit of a devil's advocate where Valhalla is not, we get spoiled with Augusta National because of how they can basically take 5 inches of rain and then still have produce Augusta National conditions like 8 hours later.
Sure.
Valhalla is not set up like that. They got hit with so much rain that week that it softened up the conditions. And I said it in one of my mornings, this is where there is some truth to, hey, this is why we're rolling back the golf ball. Because, you know, if you're one of the 20 to 25 guys who can fly at 300 plus, then and you're hitting it straight, it did kind of become like pitch and putt. Schauffele even said that in his post game. Yeah. It wasn't short game that he was worried about. He's like, listen, whoever can hit it long and straight and hit great long irons, and you saw that Victor Hovland, Colin Morikawa, Xander Schauffele, Bryson DeChambeau, his length makes everything a short iron. And that's what we got.
He can cut every single corner. It doesn't matter.
Now, as far as like being on the grounds, great site for a major championship. The logistics was shit. Obviously there was the death, but that's not necessarily the Louisville PD. It was 4:45 and raining and dark. You never, you know, and who knows if this person was even supposed to be crossing where they were. That's neither here nor there. It's so kind of remote that there's only a couple of entry and exit points. So getting in and getting out was kind of like, luckily I was in fortunate scenarios where I was able to Uber and get dropped off like right outside the back gates. And then we were able to get a ride home with a family friend who was like, hey, I got a park. I'm parked right outside the gate. It was basically like a dog kennel, that it was renting out parking spaces, but it was right outside the gate. It was cool. Nice. And they had a great setup. The Championship Plus, I heard the Basic Bogey guys saying that was the ticket they got last year. That was the ticket I ended up with. It was this one ticket where, all non-alcoholic beverages and food was free. You just walk right in, and they have it like they have volunteers just basically watching so that you have the right color wristband to even go in there. And then you just grab what you want. You walk out, you have that all day. There was plenty of space out there. It's fucking massive grounds. And so they can handle those kind of crowds. It just sucked when it got wet because everything got soggy and slippery. Yeah. And then what was dope about it is, so like we showed up and what we got here, How about this? Let's hear from Underdog. I'll give my quick play-by-play through my day at the PGA. We'll tidy that up, a couple more news items, and then we'll head out to the Charles Schwab.
Sounds good.
Fantasy Sports Corp and Underdog Fantasy have teamed up to start your fantasy season off in the win column with Best Ball. What is Best Ball? It's quite simply the easiest way to win. No team management, no trades, no waivers. It's their biggest contest ever and it has only gotten bigger. You simply have to sit and win. You don't even have to set your lineup. Always get your best score every week. Just enter a contest, draft your team, and Underdog will do the rest. What could make this even better? How about free money, up to $100 using our exclusive promo code? Go online now and use the promo code DIVPIV to double your deposit up to $100. You tell them Gingerbread sent you. Good girl.
Yeah, so tell us, bud, of your adventures around Valhalla.
All right, so sorry, I got distracted by some Dr. Pepper that went down the wrong pipe. And then I'm also police to probe protocols on ESPN. Police to probe protocols during Scottie Scheffler arrest. So I guess this is from 3 o'clock or 2:30 this afternoon. Louisville mayor said they are going to look into whether or not the proper protocols were followed during the arrest. Policies are not being followed, transparency about that, action taken, which basically is code for, yes, of course, if there's a procedural error, we'll drop everything. And that's how we're going to our way out.
I think they're just honestly doing that because of how much national attention is getting. They're covering their bases right here.
Of course. You have lawyers asking the right questions to say, like, you know, you really want to go through with this? All right, we'll figure it out. Anyway, flew down there Wednesday and got in at like 5 o'clock. Went straight out to Big Spring Country Club to have dinner with my brother-in-law and like meet a bunch of his friends. We were talking, met great people out there. Met a guy named Billy Davis, who is basically a full-time part-time caddy, quote unquote, on the senior tour. So he's going to be in our neck of the woods in a couple weeks for the US Senior Open. Might have to go down and say hi. Him and his wife, Michelle, were super nice. I chatted with them for a while. And then it was about 8:15. We're on this back patio and the sun's going down. And I see these like high school kids out there just with like buttery smooth swings hitting on the range. And I was like, fuck, I want to go ahead and hit some balls. My brother-in-law goes, we can go, you want to go play a few holes? And I was like, absolutely.
Play a few holes, sure.
Yeah. So he went and got his clubs. We went up and we just picked out, we played like 10, 11, 1, and 2. I went bogey, birdie, birdie, bogey. And it was like twilight. It was just getting dark. It was kind of like, it was a perfect way to come in. Then went to the tournament the next morning, got there at like 9:30, hit the merch tent. I got a t-shirt, a golf shirt, a quarter zip. No hats though. They didn't have a Travis Matthew. There was no Travis Matthew presence in the merch tent. And I couldn't really find any other hats. This was given to me. This is the ticket on the front is from the PGA that was hosted at Big Spring Country Club in 1952. Oh, okay. That was in Louisville, but neither here nor there. Merch tent, UPS at home. We're on the grounds by 10. Or by 10 a.m. and we go straight to 18 green and we watch Rory McIlroy and DJ and that group hit up, finish out. And then we watch Tiger and his group walk up, you know, putt out, head over. And then we walked the whole course 18-1, 7 miles is what my little like Apple Watch said after our little jaunt, because it was hilly as fuck. The cliches of all like, being on the grounds, you know, that's the only way it is kind of a little bit different than we ended up in the Chase Sapphire Lounge for about an hour or so. And then he got a text, hey, meet us over by the 17th tee. One of his cousins came out, had these wristbands for us to go into the Valhalla members tent. And so then we were in there for a couple hours and it was this massive, like basically it was a tent, you know, the corporate tent, but it was just what you would expect. There's gigantic screens everywhere, food, drinks, lots of really awesome people. And then just overlooking the 17th tee box that overlooked the 16th fairway, which also overlooked the 15th tee box. And then right behind that's the 14 green. So it was an awesome way to kind of finish the trip. Didn't see, as far as like players are concerned, I wasn't really there. I didn't really care. It was nice that we ran into Tiger. Like I was like, oh, sweet. Let's check that out. Yeah. Like the horde and just the organism that follows.
It's hard to miss when you see that crowd. You're like, well, that's Tiger. I know that's Tiger.
And it is, it's a living thing and it's cool. It's really cool to watch it kind of happen.
But we walked opposite that direction. So it was really nice. And it was early enough in the day that we could go like see the course. Cause that's kind of what I was there to see. And we ended up organically following around, Thigala, Tony Finau and Tyrrell, for a few holes. Nice. And so that was kind of cool to see them up close. But,
you give Tyrrell any frog chance? Any frog?
No, no, I did not say one love Frog Nation. I should have though, Mr. Hatton. Shout out Tyrrell. But it was cool. It was dope. Major one under the belt in the books, going down to the US Open in a couple weeks for a practice round and round one. Stay tuned for more on that. Obviously, we'll have a ton of content coming. But elsewhere in the golf world, real quick, before we dig into the Charles Schwab.
There are cool stories that came out of this weekend.
Yeah. Nelly, real quick, Mizuho America's Open. She won her sixth tournament and seven starts. She was robbed of that streak by Rose Zhang a couple weeks ago, but she is a machine, and she shit the bed on the front Sunday morning, admittedly. And I guess her caddy told her to get her head out of her ass, quote unquote, at the turn. And she turned it on, hung in there. And Nelly is just, she's doing something that's just kind of different right now. And it's fun to pay attention to. And I do think there's a little bit of that kind of Caitlin Clark spillover effect that people are going, I remember people watching this. Well, this is really good golf.
Yeah. Well, and what's cool about Nelly too is that she's also very active on social media. So like she's doing both. Like a lot of guys and women, professional athletes, can't. And yes, I know they got teams, they got people helping them do it. I get that, but like they can't handle the idea of putting effort and focus into both their profession of golf or whatever sport they're playing, and also being as active as she is on social media, posting pictures on Instagram and posts and whatever videos and. But she's out there like doing both in the off days, and she just seems to be in this perfect stride of life right now. And you're right. It's just fun to watch because I think you realize it's special.
Perfect stride of life. That sounds like a motivational book from like the 1980s hawked on Delilah at night. Delilah.
And Delilah, still a national treasure, if you ask me.
The other big, is Delilah on the air still? My high school girlfriend.
She is, actually. Like, she 100% is. Really?
Is she still like, do people like write in their problems with life?
She still does it all. Like I've seen her post on like on social media, like within the last couple months, still talking about where actually somebody asked her if she was still on the air. And she's like, I'm still here, baby. You can still check in and listen to me. Like it's just smooth as ever.
We should see if Delilah, we should call, if it's on at this time, we should call into Delilah one night.
Oh my God, just call in live. And
see if we can get Delilah's takes on our picks. She'd be like, Delilah, I'm really, you know, I've been burned in the past by Scotty, but you know, he's playing just so well right now. What do you think? Oh, baby. All right. That went.
But pose it as like a relationship like scenario.
Thanks for pointing that out. Harry Higgs, no Korn Ferry Tour. So Harry Higgs is down on the Korn Ferry Tour right now. And if you didn't see the video out there, this was the Advent Health, you know, care client Open Classic Championship, whatever, somewhere out, out near Kansas City. Anyway, Harry Higgs from nearby whatever town outside of Kansas City, but he's kind of a local guy. 83 yards, dunks it on the 72nd hole to force him to get himself into a playoff, and then he wins. And he wins, you know, with a 7-foot birdie putt. And I love it. He's very honest. He's wearing in his acceptance speech or his champ. He's like, "Winning's fucking hard. I told myself I wasn't gonna have a drink until I won again. I won again. You bet your ass there's gonna be." And this is the Korn Ferry Tour. This is a guy who's had success at the higher levels, but that, you know, when he said winning is fucking hard, I think about all the people out there who play in their weekend Nassau or, you know, their leagues, and they never win. And it's, I'll admit it. I'm not, you know, when you do see your name on the top of a list, well, dopamine hit something kind of get, you know, tings in you. Like I said, there's this guy in our league, and I recognize his name, and I'm like, fuck, he's like a plus 1.6, or maybe even a plus 2. He's a PGA teaching pro, and the kid can light it up. And all of a sudden, I told my buddies, I was like, I love that though. I love like thinking to myself, like, oh my God, there's somebody who in my brain is probably way better than me. But also, at any given day, I know I can catch lightning in a bottle, shoot, you know, a pretty decent number, especially for the earthquake, something else going on for the course that we play. So shout out to Harry Higgs for coming back and winning again, taking one step closer to maybe getting back on the PGA Tour. But on to this week, the Charles Schwab, which we will no longer refer to as Charles Schwab. This is the Colonial. It's been the Colonial since 1946. This is the longest running tournament on the PGA Tour that has been at the same location. There's only been 2 years. It was not played 1949 because of the Trinity River flood. Everybody remembers the Trinity River flood. Thoughts and prayers. Of course, yeah. Who can forget the Trinity River flood? And then 1970. Jesus, man, I was joking. And then 1975, the Players Championship hosted the Colonial that year. This was pre-TPC Sawgrass. They were bouncing around looking for a home. It was before they settled on Florida as a state and eventually Ponte Vedra. They played it at Colonial. This is a new Colonial, though. Gil Hans, who famous course architect, did Southern Hills before they got the PGA back. And I think Colonial wants to get back in the major rotation. I think that's kind of part of the reason they brought him in, gave him $20 million and said, go to work. They started literally the day after the Colonial last year. They just finished up work on it. They moved some greens around. They removed some bunkers and they kind of brought it back to its more traditional original layout, which I'm sure they made some other tweaks and lengthened it a little bit here and there. So it's going to be a relatively new course. I wouldn't say throw away course familiarity, but I would say maybe lean in more towards the blue bloods here. Fun fact, this is one of five invitationals on the PGA Tour schedule. Memorial, which is Jack's tournament, Arnie's tournament's an invitational, Tiger's tournament's an invitational, and the RBC Heritage is an invitational. Mm-hmm. However, this is the only invitational that is not a signature event. We don't have another signature event until the Memorial. I do believe there's a signature or an elevated event in the past, but I think they kind of wanted to diversify what's getting the signature event money by not giving it to the Colonial, even though the Colonial still gets its invitational status. Invitational also means they can pick whoever they want. That cool tradition they have, it's called Champions Choice, where past champions get to invite two players who just really wouldn't qualify. I mean, they could do sponsors exemptions, you know, to a certain degree, but they can't just fill the field with whoever they want because they're friends of the Colonial. There are limits. This is not NOM. There are rules. And so this year it is Pearson Cootie and this guy, Max Grazerman. Don't know Max from a hole in the wall, but Pearson Cootie is part of the Cootie brothers whose grandfather won the Masters way back in the day. And Parker is the other half of that duo. Parker Cootie was a Champions Choice last year. As far as the rest of the field's concerned, dude, it's kind of, I'm not going to say top heavy, but you have a handful of the top 10 with Scotty, Colin, Max.
It's not a bad field at all.
It's not. I mean, Brian Harman, Keegan Bradley, Sepp Straka, Jordan Spieth, Tom Kim, Chris Kirk, Tony Finau. And then you got Akshay in there, JT Poston, you know, so there are some names. Obviously most of the guys are going to take this week off, rejuvenate, get ready for the Memorial. And cause that's going to be a grind for these guys to go Memorial and US Open back to back. And I kind of think the PGA Tour likes it that way.
Well, that's what they always set the US Open to be anyways. They set the US Open up to be one of the most like hardest challenging tournaments of the year. So that just plays into it. But speaking of like the field that we're talking about here, because you said it is slightly top heavy, there's value this week. If you're playing on DraftKings, you're playing on FanDuel, whatever format you're playing, there's guys that you can get that nobody else is looking at that definitely have a chance to perform. I'm not saying – I still think there's only a handful of guys who can win this tournament this week. But there's guys that are going to be making the cut and in the top 20 of this leaderboard that you're not going to know their names, I feel like. The everyday golf fan's not going to know their names, I should say.
I mean, that's kind of par for the course. Oh, when it comes to sports betting and golf, you don't even when you're looking for leverage, you're not trying to go way outside the box. You're trying to find, you know, the struggling golfer, the struggling name who's on the rise. It's just like picking stocks. You want to find the one that not everybody else knows about that's on the rise. And then you also have to own a little bit of chalk. You also have to say like, yeah, damn it. I mean, why not have Scotty in there? Well, Scotty at 11 or whatever they're charging for him. I don't know if you go all in like that. If you're picking
DraftKings, is that Scotty on DraftKings is priced at 13.3 this week.
Yeah, you can't responsibly make a lineup like that. If you're picking winners for damn sure, I pick Scotty versus the for the field against the field on that.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to bring up about the Colonial before we get more into our fantasy is this is another glam slam event. The winner gets a jacket. Mm-hmm. The RBC Heritage had their Heritage plaid or whatever it's called now. This is the same fucking plaid. It's not really the same, but it looks very similar. It's a red tartan, the traditional Scottish tartan plaid jacket. And they started handing it out in 1952. Before that, it was a navy jacket originally. Mm-hmm. And then in 1952, the owner at the time just decided to pay a little homage to the home of golf and go with the Scottish look. What do we have for the course this week? Again, it was Gil Hans.
So this is interesting because even with the renovations that you mentioned, this course is still going to play a bit differently than kind of the run of courses we've had recently, because this is a short, a little over 1700 yards. It's a par 70. This is going to bring
for a par 70. This is a beefy course.
Well, so sure, for a par 70. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. But with the way the holes are constructed now and some of the angles you got to take, it's going to bring into play, as you'll see later, guys like Brian Harman, who are not, you don't have to be long to have success here, I don't think. I think it brings in a whole nother kind of realm of players that really shine at courses where distance isn't key. And it's going to be why you'll see later that Brian Harman is in my emergency nine this week, because I think this is just set up for his type of player. We want ball striker, like dead on ball strikers this week.
Yeah.
Approaches are going to be shorter. The average par four is shorter than what we've been seeing for the past month. I mean, for pretty much past month straight, par four is 450 to 200 has been a pretty much staple in the stats, but we're dropping down to 400 to 450 at this point for this week. This is going to play differently than what we've been seeing recently. So I'm looking at recent results as a key of just general form. Like, I think that's important as far as gauging where a guy's head is and their confidence level. But I'm really this week focusing on the key stats when picking my guys this week, because like you said, because of the changes the course has gone through, tournament history isn't really a massive factor for me this week. And recent results, this is just so different.
That's fair. I can appreciate that. I live in the now. Look what's in front of you. I get what you're saying as far as you don't necessarily have to be a bomber, especially because as long as it's dry, you're going to get some run. So, yeah, you can be Brian Harman, fly at 265 and let it run out a little bit on this course. Yeah. Also, the weather is going to be just hot and kind of breezy. I mean, we get steady winds of 15 miles an hour, which means you're going to get some gusts 2025. So you're going to be, that's definitely a consideration. People who can play in the wind, obviously Brian Harman, with the way he performed last year at the Open Championship, he can check that box. So I kind of like that play. I'm going off of my key three that are going to stay my key three, which is ball striking, putting, and tee to green, and just see how that shakes out. And again, not worrying about the DK leverage plays. I'm just looking for nine guys that I really do think are going to beat your nine guys. You know, who's going to win the most money out of these nine people? Who cares if we have the same one, because that's the game that we're playing.
Sure. Which we've been very similar in recent weeks.
And so in doing that, it's kind of interesting. I look at my nine here, and we'll get to them in just a second, and the reasons behind who I'm playing. It is just like you said, a lot of this is just recency bias. I'm like, oh yeah, they played well last week, or oh yeah, I've seen their name a lot recently. You know, like going with form in both the numerical, crunch the numbers, and then also just playing your gut. Quick note about this course. It has a famous three-hole stretch. Like, we've talked about the snake pit over the Valspar, the bear trap for the Honda. It's always going to be the Honda down in South Florida, PGA National. And then they don't have a nickname for it. It's just the closing holes at Sawgrass, 16, 17, 18, which is probably, you know, the most famous closing three. Colonial has a three-hole stretch called the Horrible Horseshoe. And it is actually, it's on the front nine, and it's 3, 4, and 5. And when you look at the scorecard,
you don't often get it on the front nine, right? Like, let's be honest.
Hear about the little stretch because I mean, it makes sense, you know, that kind of like closing challenge. But I like this hole. If you look at holes one and two, are the 18th and 17th ranked. They're the two easiest holes. And then you go number three is a 483 yard par four, ranked fourth toughest hole last year. Number four is a 247 yard par three. It was the third toughest last year. And number five is a 481 yard par four. It was the toughest hole last year.
Holes over par.
I like that you kind of get lulled into that sense of like, all right. And then bam, bam, bam. And you have to go through the next 13 holes or whatever it is, semi-concussed. At the same time, I think if you can get through those first five holes, have you ever seen the movie Days of Thunder?
Yes.
All right. Great movie. So in the closing, in the final Daytona 500, you know, Cole Trickle, he's got the mellow yellow car, which I think when the movie all came out, because of the way it was promoed, we thought he was going to be in the mellow yellow the whole time. You didn't realize he was in, like, first it was like the city car, and then it was, you know, whatever fucking it was. Anyway, when he starts that Daytona 500 out, he's dead ass silent. You know, Harry's on the radio telling him, Cole, you got to do this, you got to do that. And we know why, because he's a little shaken up from having just gotten, you know, fucked up in the Daytona 500 the year before and being in the hospital, and maybe I'm never going to race again. And then all of a sudden, uh-oh, there's a wreck ahead. And the exact same scenario comes. And, you know, they're telling Cole, you got to do this. And he's, you know, quiet, quiet, quiet. He gets through the wreck, and then he just lets loose. Whoa, let's go. And I feel like that's kind of got to be what the opening five holes at Colonial must feel like, where you get a couple laps in, you get a little momentum going, but nothing really starts until you get through three, four, and five. And after that, it's like, all right, did it get me? Did I get nicked up? Do I have to, like, what, you know, am I good? Oh my God, I made it through. And I think if you just say to guys, I'll give you even through five, all 4 days, I think everybody would sign up for it, because even with the first two holes being obvious birdie opportunities, playing well under par and being the two easiest, you just don't want to give back strokes. If you're even on three, four, and five for the week, you are gaining strokes on the field. So when you look at those, like you said, both A, who's playing good recently, so who's got the confidence to just kind of not really let that bother them, and then also B, who can hit some solid long irons. And even though Brian Harman's a little guy, I did see him throw some freaking darts with his hybrids. These guys are good, man. They're just not,
form right now too. So that's why I have him high in my rankings. He's in good form right now.
These people aren't like us, where I hear folks go, oh God, I don't touch my four iron because, you know, I can make contact, but I don't know where it's going. It's not like that. It's much more of, how far do I have to hit it? What type of shot do I need? And then let me turn around in my tool bag, and how do I craft that? All right, we got 9 minutes left, so let's get into our emergency nine.
And real fast, that par four fifth hole, just looking at the specifics of it as you were talking about it, 23.5% bogey that hole, and a whopping just about 5% of double bogeys or worse on that hole. Just to give you an idea of that the rough math there is just over 28% of bogeys or worse. The next closest hole is the third hole. Oh no, I'm sorry, the fourth hole right before it at like 21.5%. That fifth hole isn't going to be an absolute beast this week. We'll see how the guys handle it. But yeah, let's get into our rankings here. I'll kick us off, and I'm doing this just for this sake right here. Number nine, because it's Texas, baby, it's Jordan Spieth time. He may not win it. I don't think he's in winning form right now, but Jordan Spieth, he just, no matter how bad he's playing, he shows up in Texas. So I'm going to plug Jordan Spieth in at number nine because I have so much value in the rest of my rankings. At number eight, Sepp Straka. At number seven, Matty Schmid. Yes, that's the first time that name's been said on this show. Number six, Austin Eckroat. Number five, Colin Morikawa. Number four, Scotty Scheffler, even though I could definitely see him winning this. I'm leaving some room in there for the head games to still be creeping in here. Number three, Justin Lauer. Number two, Brian Harman. And my number one, another guy who likes to perform in Texas, who's in good form, Mr. Akshay Bhatia.
Did I black out and miss Scotty Scheffler in your nine?
No, I had him at four.
Sorry, I did black out.
I did a whole little slightly like 2 second monologue on him too.
That's when really I blacked out. Well, I did because as you're gonna see here in a second, there's a good bit of crossover in our nines this week.
There has been recently. It's wild.
And just like you at number nine, I got Jordan Spieth because DraftKings got him at 10-6, and we're back in Texas, so you can't bet against him there. I'm gonna bookend it with Texans, so to speak. Mark Hubbard at eight because he was a name that was up on the leaderboard at the PGA. Justin Lauer at seven, same kind of thing. Not at the PGA, but he finished high at the AT&T. Harris English was up there on the PGA. Billy Horschel up there on the PGA. Aaron Rye up there on the PGA. Christian Bezuidenhout, he's number three for me. he's just always a name that's kind of out there, and he ranks high in my model. He's third in my model, so I'm going to trust that. Number two in my model, Akshay Bhatia, and number one in my model and number one in my heart right now, Scotty Scheffler. Sure. I do think that he's going to do something special and continue the streak. And at the end of it all, the Valhalla victim is going to end up being Scotty.
Hey, you know, that's not bad. You know, this is actually, we have less crossover, still a decent amount. We have six guys crossed over here. But compared to recent weeks where we've had pretty much seven, eight, or nine guys crossover, like we might actually have a chance for one of us to create some separation in our season long points here, because although I think we've both been doing well, I haven't really been able to gain any ground on your slight lead on me because of all the crossover we've had. So we'll see. And I do want to give you a shout out here too, because last, and I forget who it was that you put in your rankings last week who you didn't know withdrew and had withdrawn. And I forget who it was that withdrew now, which is silly.
It wasn't Ludwig, was it?
No, Ludwig missed the cut. No, because we both played him. But then last minute...
Hideki.
It was Hideki, yeah. And then last minute, off the cuff, you just threw in Justin Rose, who comes out and finishes T6. Now, I kept seeing him on the leaderboard. I said, Bud catching fucking lightning in a bottle, just throwing a name out there, and boom, it nails. Like, so good for Bud. Good for you.
I appreciate that. He was fun to watch, and he threw a 64 out there, but it was buried by Shane Lowry's 62, and we got a couple minutes left.
We didn't even talk about Shane Lowry's 60. There was two course record ties this week. We didn't even talk about them.
And that's why there's a lot of chirping about, oh, can't go back to Valhalla, 21 under, this, that, and the other. First of all, again,
I didn't like that. I prefer lower scores, but that's fine.
But you can't control the weather. And that's why I was saying they're not all Augusta. So when you get the weather like that, it's going to happen. Hell, even look what happened when DJ got to Augusta in November when they couldn't provide those kind of crisp, firm conditions. He went to 20 under. So I do think it's an overreaction. Valhalla, had that course maintained dry, firm conditions? No, there's no way that those scores are going to be like that, because those guys aren't going to be able to hold those clubs from those distances without the, you know, the benefit of very, very soft greens. So I hope that major golf goes back to Valhalla. I don't know if the PGA is going to go back. Yeah. The locals all are split behind on that. Some of them were like, we didn't fucking need it in the first place. Good riddance. It's kind of wild, because you forget it was sneaky in there before this PGA Frisco was built. The PGA of America, that's where their headquarters was. I took a picture in front of the building. It still has the sign on it, you know, headquarters of the PGA of America. They just moved out when PGA Frisco opened up. And so that's kind of the thing where people are like, well, after 20 some odd, 30 some odd years and four majors, like the PGA of America moved its headquarters out of Valhalla when the new owners took over. There's no reason for them to come back here for their major. They've already got two that are scheduled for Frisco. So they're going to just make that their anchor. I kind of hope, though, like I said, it's a great venue for a big tournament. The Ryder Cup was already there once. I could see the Ryder Cup going back there. I could see maybe like a Solheim Cup or even a Curtis Cup or even a Walker Cup. But I don't think they're done with Valhalla. I just think that just the PGA is done with Valhalla. And I would even endorse a U.S. Open there, because I do think that if you could trick it up maybe a little bit more, or hopefully just get the weather right. But unfortunately... I don't think any of that's going to happen. I think Valhalla is done. I just would love for it to go back.
Well, and as you alluded to, too, it seems to have the local crowd, both support and knowledge of the game, to really, like, when an event is there, to make the most of it, to really get the hype up as much as it can, to really embrace there being a full-blown event there. So if there's not a major there again, I do agree with you. I feel like it would be kind of a shame. It seems like it's set up perfectly for it.
That was also the crowd that I was kind of running in. I don't know if the real man on the people crowd might have been like, this is fucking terrible. All these out-of-towners coming in. We already have the Kentucky Derby here. We don't need you. But that's also short-sighted on their part. Charles Schwab this week, Memorial, U.S. Open. We got a hell of a couple weeks ahead. The Divots and Pivots road tour continues, and then we're going to figure out how to maybe finagle breakfast for the Open somewhere. Yeah, so fun. Stay tuned for more on that. Andrew, anything, any parting shots of wisdom do you have for this week?
Stop when you see the red and blue lights. We'll see you later, everybody. Have a great night. Love you. Stay classy, friends, as always.